Welcome to Artbeat Africa, the BBC's new weekly roundup of cultural treats from Focus on Africa. I'm Kim Chakanetsa. This week's menu includes a little bit of music from Rwanda and some more music from Nigeria by way of London, and some spectacular storytelling from a Somali writer. If African Boy is not yet on your musical radar, he really should be. His first single, called Shoplifting in Lidl, came out in 2007 and caused quite a stir. Lidl is a German global discount supermarket chain. The artist, known to friends and family as Olushola Ajose, told the BBC's Max Reinhardt about his origins. Africa, when I was in her womb, I heard Fela Kuti say that I was born. 10 marks they gave me served as a reminder to my tribal ancestry. Made with love, Africa.
London, Nigeria. To be exact, Abule Egba, which is 2 hours outside of Lagos, Ogun State. That's where I grew up. I went primary school when I was a kid. You know, that's where my grandma still stays.
So you're really Niger?
Yes.
But you're also really London?
Yes, I am.
So how does that work in your music?
It allows me to express different ideas. It allows me to talk differently, speak Yoruba when I feel like. It allows me to dip into UK, British culture. It is about finding home away from home, discovering Africa outside of Africa, discovering who I am and what I want to represent.
I mean, I think that maybe there are two uniquely African things about you. And one is that you're such a conscious rapper. You really are speaking about issues.
My dad always told me that music is a powerful tool. And as a musician himself, he was like, if he doesn't have anything real to say, then what's the point? There's messages that I feel only I can deliver in my position with the platform that I have, with my experiences.
Like the whole satirical, just funny stuff that you do. I mean, and I know that when people look at Fela, like Fela was always satirical, he was always sarcastic, he was always ironic, his lyrics are just really important. But he's part of a whole cultural thing that the Yoruba have. Do you think you're part of that?
I think it's part of me. My personality and the humour, that's what people liked about me. But there's truth in it, and that's what kind of makes comedy comedy as well, because people laugh because it's true.
Back to Fela for a moment. Now, of course, he is the creator of Afrobeat, but you've used some of his music on one of the tracks on your album. Tell us about that.
I was studying for my psychology degree in my first year, and I heard this track. It's Wadele Warohi, 1965, Fela.
So pre-Afrobeat.
Pre-Afrobeat, Fela Ransom, Kuti, and the Kubulutins. So this is early Fela, and what I find interesting about my position as an artist here is when Fela, before he really coined the Afrobeat sound that everyone knows him for, he was in the UK. He was experimenting. For me now as African Boy, working on that track, it just fit. It just resonates, and now it kind of works with what's going on now. It's now titled Hit 'Em Up. But yeah, it's very interesting listening to a lot of early Fela, because it allows you to understand the evolution.
The rise of Captain Africa.
That was London-based Nigerian musician African Boy. To the literary world now, where Somali writer Diriye Osman has been making great strides. He's become the first African to win the Polari First Book Prize for his collection of short stories entitled Fairy Tales for Lost Children. The Polari Prize is awarded for a first book which explores the experiences of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people. The judges said the book dazzled them with a wide range of literary voices in a stunning collection of short stories. Jenny Horrocks asked them first to read from one of the stories, Watering the Imagination.
I have spent my whole life living near the coast of Bosaso, Somalia. I don't know any other land. While the boat people, those who are hungry for new homes in places like London and Luxembourg, risk their lives on cargo ships, I stand firm on the soil and I tell stories. I tell stories to my daughters about kings and warrior queens, freedom fighters and poets. I tell these stories to remind my children and myself that Somalia is fertile with history and myth. The only seed that needs regular watering is our imagination. My eldest daughter, Suldana, is in love with another woman. She's 18 and she spends her days working at our kiosk selling milk and eggs. And at night, she sneaks out and goes down to the beach to see her lover. She crawls back into bed at dawn smelling of sea and salt and perfume. Suldana is beautiful and she wraps this beauty around herself like a shawl of stars. When she smiles, her dimples deepen and you can't help but be charmed. When she walks down the street, men stare and whistle and ache. But they cannot have her. Every day, marriage proposals arrive with offers of high dowries, but I wave them away. We never talk about these things like mothers and daughters should, but I respect her privacy and I allow her to live.
That's the beautiful start of your book, and you're writing there as a mother. How difficult is that?
The whole point of being a writer is so that you can get into the minds of different characters. I like the fact that the story opens with a mother who's actually, in many senses, a very traditional mother, but she's not terribly concerned with religiosity or tradition when it comes to the protection and happiness of her daughter. And I thought, what an amazing message to send out, because something that a lot of LGBT youth from all across the world experience is that initial rejection that comes from family. And it's incredibly painful. And I thought, how brilliant is it that here is a story about a woman who unconditionally loves her daughter, and despite the many societal hurdles that are standing in their way, she's like, I give you my blessing and I love you unconditionally.
Did you get that kind of understanding when you were growing up?
I didn't get that kind of understanding from my immediate family. I feel like it's only now that the conversation of gay rights and gay issues are really being discussed all across the African diaspora. In the 90s, when I was growing up, it was just blanket silence. And it was incredibly difficult to express anything. So when I came out to my parents, I think they knew, they had a sense. But it was the idea of me voicing the unspeakable in their minds. In a culture like the Somali community where, you know, we don't necessarily express our emotions in the way that we perhaps would like to express our emotions, here I was making a very bold statement about my identity and saying, hey, this is who I actually am, and please show me some love and some respect. And I think that startled them. But as time has passed, you learn to see the world from a more generous perspective.
And have your parents learned that?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I haven't spoken to my parents in a very long time, but I don't doubt that they love me very much. It's just that for my own sanity and for my own sense of self-preservation, I just felt, let me leave you guys alone to it until you actually come to terms with what you need to come to terms with. And when you're ready, I'm here.
Now, how do you feel about winning this award that you won at the end of last week? You must be thrilled to bits.
I really felt very proud because I'm the first African writer to win this award. I wasn't expecting it, and I was extremely happy because before the prize, I felt kind of dispirited in many ways about the path that I was on, because writing is ultimately a solitary pursuit, and it can be a very dispiriting pursuit in many ways, but it can also be a joy-inducing experience, not just for the readers, but also for the writer. And so it was a wonderful piece of validation.
Tell the listeners more about Fairy Tales for Lost Children. I've read the book and I absolutely loved it because I think the language you use is beautiful. The reading there, that you know, she wrapped her beauty around her like a shawl of stars. I mean, oh, goodness me. It's the kind of writing that makes my heart skip a beat.
But thank you.
Explain what it is. It's a series of short stories.
The crux of the book is about sexual identity within the context of being a gay Muslim, African. It's fundamentally a book about freedom. And what a beautiful thing in this day and age.
Now, the Independent newspaper here in the UK reviewed your book by saying, at a time when homosexuality is still illegal in most of Africa and barely features in contemporary African fiction, this book is a welcome surprise. At a time when African writing is on the rise, Osman stands above the crowd. That's a great review to have. It's a brave thing you've done, don't you think?
When I first started writing this book, I was in my mid-20s and I was writing the book as I was coming out. I never sat back and thought to myself, this is a brave thing. For me, it was a matter of, I need to write this, or otherwise I will go mad if I don't get
this. It was a kind of catharsis.
It was a complete catharsis. It's something I'm very proud of.
The beautiful prose of Dirye Osman. When lead singer and songwriter Adrian Kazigira decided to form a group in Rwanda, he went looking for the good ones, the best musicians he could find. The Good Ones became the name of his four-piece band that includes a subsistence farmer like him, a driver and a teacher. The Good Ones mostly play weekends at weddings and funerals. Their instruments are simple, a guitar, percussion and harmonising voices, creating a compelling sound which is traditional yet fresh. Udia, which they perform for our series BBC Africa Beats, is a love song written by Adrian for his wife after her death.
I call this song Eudia because it was my wife's name. It's a song about her. Unfortunately, she passed away in 2011. I never had any problems with my wife. We never argued. After she passed away, as an artist, I felt the need to sing her name. It's a love song, describing how my wife was and the good manners of her people and the love they showed me. The job I do outside of my music is a very important job, a job that provides a living to millions, a job that no country can do without. I'm a farmer, but I would love to focus more on my music. The instruments we use are very basic. We can't afford anything else at the moment. So we find very basic tools that can complement the guitar sound. We hope that with a bit of help, we'll be able to find enough equipment and rub shoulders with big names.
The Good Ones indeed, ending this edition of Artbeat Africa. Thanks for listening. And join us again next week for more cultural inspiration from across the continent. If you can't wait, you can also find arts and cultural stories throughout the week on our Facebook, Twitter and Google Plus pages. Our username is BBC Africa. I'm Kim Chakaneta. Bye for now.